Good evening, everyone. I'm Lenore Mudu. Welcome to Health Chat. On the program today, we will discuss menstrual hygiene and later on look at malaria and vaccine. May 28th is Menstrual Hygiene Day. It's a global advocacy platform that observers say brings together the voices and actions of nonprofits, government agencies, individuals, the private sector, and the media to promote good menstrual hygiene management for all women and girls. The United Nations Children Fund says an estimated 1 in 10 girls in sub-Saharan Africa misses school at some point during their period because of the lack of access to menstrual health supply. And at least 500 million women and girls worldwide lack adequate facilities for menstrual hygiene management. First off, we will travel to Kenya now to look at how an organization called ZANU Africa Foundation is addressing menstrual hygiene for girls. VOA's Adam Phillips has the story.
In Kenya, 2 out of 3 women and girls cannot use sanitary pads, either because they can't afford them or none are available. That's why ZANU Africa has distributed them free to over 50,000 Kenyan schoolgirls since 2009. Allison Nakamura, the executive director of the ZANU Africa Foundation, explains why sanitary pads are so important.
So one, if you're bleeding and can't control the blood, there's like a yuck factor to that, right? So you're staining your clothes.
And we're having a little technical difficulties, so we may go back to the interview, to that package. But now I spoke to a young woman called Yacinta Untuyeko. She's originally from Tanzania. So Yacinta is founder and managing director of Kasole Secrets, a social enterprise that creates and distributes bamboo-made sanitary napkins across Tanzania. She's also a fellow of the Global Fund, the Global Good Fund. And I spoke with her recently, along with Carrie Rich. We had the discussion with Carrie Rich, and Carrie Rich is co-founder and CEO of the Global Good Fund. Take a listen.
Yacinta, let me start with you. You started your business, your enterprise, after a personal experience having to deal with menstruation and not finding adequate resources. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, I decided to dedicate my life as an entrepreneur because of my personal challenges during menstruation. And when I joined university, pursuing with my Bachelor of Engineering in Telecommunication, my challenges doubled. So after my university, I decided to be part of solution by starting hand selling pads. Mm-hmm. Something, an experience which really opened up my eyes.
So when you talk about challenges, can you tell us maybe one specifically?
Yeah, for me, I was really struggling with the menstrual cramps. But when I went to the university, I started getting struggle with the quality of sanitary pads. And sometimes have to go very far for the site visit. But when I was starting selling pads, I realized women have so many challenges, like social stigma, access to water, poor infrastructures, and education itself as a menstrual hygiene management education. And this is something which really make me feel like I really need to do something to improve the menstrual experience for women and girls.
It's interesting that you chose that field. And Carrie, let me come to you. When you look at an enterprise like Yacinta's enterprise, the Global Good Fund supports social entrepreneurs. Why is such an enterprise important to support?
There are complex social challenges of our time that can be addressed through entrepreneurship, through business. And Hyacintha is creating a social solution to a pressing problem through business. Those are exactly the high potential young leaders we're seeking to support.
And Hyacintha, how is your product unique and how does it help women?
Yeah, so the glory parts is bamboo made, and bamboo by nature is antibacterial, antiviral, and antimicrobial. So we decided to take advantage of these features to develop sanitary pads. But also we carbonate the bamboo so that we increase the absorption power of the pads and increase the health benefits. So women who really struggle with the cramps or women who are having irregular menses, we are advising them to use Glory Pads for 3 cycles continuous before they report on their progress. So this is how it looks like, and this is the charcoal, and we don't put any chemicals.
Okay, so it's recyclable. And Carrie, how are fellows selected in the program? I mean, you came across Jacinta. What is the process?
So Jacinta was one of 2,000 applicants who applied to be a Global Good Fund Fellow. We actually have open application right now at globalgoodfund.org. Anyone anywhere in the world can apply to be a Global Good Fund Fellow. And we select from 2,000 to weed out the best social entrepreneurs who are creating a ripple effect of change across the world.
So Jacinta, what is your message around menstruation?
I strongly believe in inclusion and education as the most powerful tool for bringing change when we educate about menstruation. But also, men and boys should not be left behind, because that's the way we can be able to break the silence. We all need to know about menstruation because we are the product of menstruation.
And quickly, Carrie, what is expected of fellows, and how do you measure impact?
Our goal is for Jacinta and all the other Global Good Fund Fellows to create a ripple effect of social change. We measure leadership development, enterprise growth, and social impact quarter over quarter and year after year. And so far, the Global Good Fund Fellows have impacted 8.5 million lives to date globally.
And Jacinta, the last word to you. How are girls benefiting from this? How expensive is it, or cheap?
Yeah, so what we are trying to do is to make sure that we lower down the price, because now the government has reduced the value added tax and we have actually lowered the price. But we also run a massively number of menstrual education in my country with the community, boys and girls, to make sure that girls, they have access to sanitary pads even if they can't afford.
Okay, and involving boys is so important.
Yeah, that is our primary goal.
Thank you so much, Jacinta and Carrie. We appreciate your time.
And that was Jacinta Ntuye, co-founder and managing director of Kasoli Secrets, and Carrie Rich, co-founder and CEO of the Global Good Fund. We continue to look at women's reproductive health. And now we have a story by VOA's Lisa Schlein on how gender inequality robs women of sexual reproductive rights. Take a listen.
Big gains have been made in reproductive rights over the past 50 years, when the United Nations Population Fund was created. The number of births per woman has dropped by nearly half to 2.5 births. There's been a significant decrease in fertility rates in the least developed countries, as well as deaths from pregnancy-related causes. But the UNFPA reports more than 200 million women are subjected to unwanted pregnancies because they have no access to modern contraceptives. It says more than 800 women die every day from preventable causes during pregnancy and childbirth because many are unable to access reproductive health services. Director of UNFPA in Geneva, Monica Ferro, says gender inequality is the obstacle that underpins all others. She says gender unequal norms and attitudes are often used to control women's sexuality and reproduction.
Gender inequality limits the ability of women to freely make fundamental decisions about when and with whom to have sex, about the use of contraception or healthcare, and about whether and when to seek employment or whether to seek higher education.
The report says hundreds of millions of women worldwide are being left behind, unable to enjoy their rights to sexual and reproductive health. It says these women and girls typically are poorer, rural, and less educated. It says two-thirds of maternal deaths today occur in sub-Saharan Africa. Ferro tells VOA women fare best in countries that have invested most in gender equality policies and programs. Most of these countries are in the developed world.
If you look at the countries who are the most challenged ones, it's countries where women still face many barriers in accessing health, in accessing especially sexual reproductive health and rights. And this has to do also with specific challenges, be it specific economic crisis, shortfalls.
The UNFPA has set itself several ambitious goals, timed to meet the Sustainable Development Goals by 2030. These include the elimination of preventable maternal deaths, creating universal access to family planning, and achieving zero tolerance for violent and abusive practices that harm women and girls. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Now, statistics show that there has been remarkable decline in the number of maternal and child deaths during the past two decades in Ethiopia. However, these health improvements have been largely skewed toward older children, and progress around saving newborns has been much slower. I spoke with Dr. Abiba Bekele. She is newborn health advisor with USAID's Maternal and Child Survival Program in Ethiopia.
Ethiopia has made a lot of progress over the past two decades in terms of reducing both maternal and child deaths, child mortality. But the rate of decline in terms of newborn mortality was very, very slow. So currently, newborn mortality is about 29 per 1,000 live births. So when you change that mortality to total population, it translates to about 80,000 annual newborn deaths, neonatal deaths means in the first months of life. So that is huge number. And this is compounded by the fact that a lot of deliveries still happen at home. Mm-hmm. About 70% of deliveries currently are at home in unhygienic condition, rural communities, less literacy, so that complicates it.
So what is the cause why many women give birth at home?
There are several reasons for that. There are cultural and traditional reasons. For example, women would like to have their family support, to be surrounded by family members when they give birth, and our facilities may not be conducive for that. In addition to that, it's access to the service may not be good. Cost of care, not only direct cost of the service, but mm-hmm. also opportunity costs. So it's a lot of social, cultural, traditional, as well as economic related problems that prevent women from going to facilities.
So now, what are the key strategies that you have used to improve these issues?
The government understands that newborn mortality is very high and takes that very seriously. It's a key priority of the health sector transformation plan. It's a 5 years plan we're currently implementing. As part of that, the Maternal and Child Survival Program and its predecessor supported the government to try to see if community-based newborn care can be done using the health extension workers we have in Ethiopia. So we have been able to demonstrate that we can train health extension workers and they can do newborn care at community level. So if the caretakers cannot come to the facilities, we need to go to them. So using that approach, we supported the government of Ethiopia to develop, to come up with a community-based newborn care strategy, mm-hmm. which brings the service very closer to the family. So health extension workers, these are primary health care workers that are based in the villages, are trained to identify women early in their pregnancy, follow them through their pregnancy period, promote facility delivery, but when that is not possible, support them during the home birthing process, and then identify the newborns immediately after birth and provide the support that the newborn needs during the day of birth as well as in the subsequent days, especially in the first week of life.
Really an integrated approach. So what kind of impact have you seen?
So in terms of the Maternal and Child Survival Program, we really, alongside the providing the service, we really focused on community empowerment. Okay. And we've seen that paying off. So from the evaluations we did, we have seen that mothers-in-law are less fatalistic now of newborn survival. They allow their daughters-in-law to go to facilities for pregnancy checkup, even delivery and postnatal care. Husbands are also have better knowledge of maternal and newborn care. They encourage their wives to go to antenatal care early on, from the first trimester. We've also seen that women have now better self-efficacy in terms of really engaging in maternal, newborn, and child health issues.
And that was Dr. Abiba Bekele, newborn health advisor with USAID's flagship maternal and child survival program in Ethiopia. Now, when a woman gives birth, it's often a happy time. And then the mother and baby are welcome in the home. People celebrate. But experts say that after giving birth, the mother and the baby's health are still at a very critical stage. And they say that women need a special care after giving birth. And 3 months after birth, it is a critical time for mom's health. Take a listen to this report by VOA's Carol Pearson.
Hi. Good afternoon. How are you? How are you?
When a woman has good prenatal care, the 9 months she's pregnant are filled with doctor's visits focused on her health and the baby's.
Good morning, Lima.
But what about the 3 months after she gives birth? Rachel Cobb says she was overwhelmed.
People have been doing this forever, and it's this shared experience that everyone has, yet I feel so lonely. And I don't know how to ask for help.
This period is known as the fourth trimester.
The fourth trimester is overwhelming, and I don't think anyone can be fully prepared for it.
A survey by Orlando Health finds more than a quarter of women did not plan for their own health management following delivery.
It's very important for new moms to follow up with their midwives or their physicians, ideally sooner rather than later.
40% felt overwhelmed or depressed.
You immediately feel like I'm a bad mom because I feel this way, and you're not.
For poor women, it's far worse. Another study shows that African American or Hispanic mothers struggle more than white middle class women.
These mothers having low incomes find they're unable to pay the high costs associated with maintaining a healthy diet or getting regular exercise or simply finding time to take care of themselves.
He found that these women feel uncomfortable talking to caregivers with different racial or ethnic backgrounds.
Some of the mothers I've interviewed indicated that they were very worried that if they told an agency staff person that they were having troubles keeping up with their baby's service needs, that the staff member may call an agency that might come and take the baby away from the mother.
Yet it's critical that all women see a doctor during the fourth trimester.
A lot of it is just reassurance, but some of it needs to be treated.
Professor Keefe says health policies need to change so all mothers can have their health needs met. Carol Pearson, VOA News.
Well, we turn now to a different topic, which is malaria. And over 200 million people are affected by malaria each year around the world, and the majority are children under the age of 5 in sub-Saharan Africa. But there is some good news on the malaria front. Recently, the World Health Organization certified Algeria and Argentina free of malaria.
It is particularly good news that Algeria, the country where the malaria parasite was discovered in 1880, should be free of this deadly disease, which every year kills more than 400,000 people. Most of the victims are children under age 5 in Africa. The World Health Organization reports Algeria now becomes the second country in Africa to be recognized as malaria-free after Mauritius, which was certified in 1973. And it notes Argentina is the second country in South America after Paraguay to be declared malaria-free. WHO spokeswoman Fadela Shaib tells VOA a combination of many factors has made these achievements possible.
It's very good news for Algeria and Argentina, but also for the two continents and globally also. It means that malaria can be beaten, but the effort should continue because we need also to enhance surveillance to be able to detect if any cases of malaria are still present in the country.
WHO says the two countries eliminated malaria by employing a number of basic, well-proven measures, including insecticide-treated mosquito nets. It says both countries improved surveillance. This enabled them to rapidly identify and treat every last case of malaria. It says they provided free diagnosis and treatment within their borders. In the case of Argentina, WHO says cross-border collaboration with its neighbor Bolivia was critical in combating malaria. It says both countries teamed up to spray more than 22,000 homes in border areas and to conduct widespread malaria testing. WHO says Algeria's and Argentina's unwavering commitment, perseverance, and success in combating malaria should serve as a model for other countries to put an end to this ancient scourge. Both Algeria and Argentina have succeeded in ridding themselves of the deadly malaria parasite without the benefit of a protective vaccine. Health officials are hopeful this task may become easier in the future, with the recent rollout of the first promising malaria vaccine in Ghana and Malawi. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
And speaking of the malaria vaccine, as Lisa Schlein mentioned at the end of the report, more good news, malaria is being prevented with a first ever vaccine that is being rolled out in Malawi along with Ghana and Kenya. Take a listen.
Health officials at Malawi Silikuni Community Hospital are giving children injections of Africa's first malaria vaccine. The mosquito spread disease kills more than 430,000 people per year, most of them African children. It took over 30 years and nearly $1 billion to develop a vaccine against malaria. Known as RTSS, the vaccine is only helpful for children under 2 years of age, who receive four doses at months 5, 6, 7, and 22. Michael Kayange is Malawi's deputy director of health.
After we did clinical trials, we had several age groups that we looked at. This vaccine was seen to be very, very effective in children aged between 5 months and 22 months. In other age groups, it didn't really show usefulness.
A long line of mothers brought their children to choose this launch of the pilot phase of the World Health Organization approved vaccine. Malawi's mothers, like Faneka Pantengo, are excited about the vaccine's potential. She says malaria is a deadly killer disease for not only children, but adults as well. Although she has other children who are not vaccinated, Kapantengo says she feels lucky to have her new baby protected from malaria. Testing between 2009 and 2014 showed the vaccine reduces clinical malaria cases by 40% and severe malaria cases by 30%. But it also caused a 60% reduction in severe malaria anemia, the most common reason children die from malaria. Kayange says Malawians will still need to take precautions to avoid their children getting ill from malaria.
So this new vaccine is just an additional tool to the control and elimination of malaria in this country. So whoever will get this vaccine, all the children that will get the vaccine, we encourage them to still use other malaria prevention methods, like sleeping under mosquito nets, getting to the hospital quickly when they have fevers or they have body aches.
Despite its partial protection from malaria, the vaccine could save millions of lives in Malawi, says Kayange. The pilot project will be launched in Ghana and Kenya next week. The WHO will use the results to inform policy advice before the vaccine is rolled out in other malaria hit countries. Lamek Masina for VOA News, Lilongwe.
And vaccines have been used for many, many years to rid the world of some of the deadliest diseases over the years. However, controversies continue to arise around vaccines, with some people refusing to vaccinate themselves or their children. VOA's Carol Pearson reports that vaccines could make a world free of diseases like malaria, HIV, and cancer possible.
Ask any pediatrician about vaccines, and you will hear what I heard from Dr. Peter Hotez, a pediatrician and a professor at the Baylor College of Medicine.
Vaccines are one of the greatest inventions of humankind.
Global vaccination programs have ended smallpox, and they're closing in on polio, a disease that used to paralyze 350,000 people each year. Because of a global immunization program, that number now stands at 20. Pakistan and Afghanistan are the last remaining countries where the polio virus is still spreading. Diseases like smallpox, polio, and measles can only be transmitted from one person to another. Dr. Walter Orenstein from the Emory Vaccine Center says that's why they can be wiped off the face of the earth.
If you can break the chains of human-to-human transmission, then you can eradicate the disease.
Most of the diseases that can be prevented through vaccines are caused by viruses. Think of measles, mumps, or chickenpox. But the most exciting news during World Immunization Week is about a vaccine against the parasite that causes malaria. Dr. Pedro Alonso of the World Health Organization said Malawi, Ghana, and Kenya will be giving malaria vaccines to children in the coming weeks.
This is the first vaccine against a human malaria parasite. Parasites are really complex organisms, much more so than a virus or a bacteria. And that's why it has taken 30 years to develop this first vaccine.
Vaccines can already protect against two types of cancer, cervical and oral cancers caused by the human papillomavirus and liver cancer caused by the hepatitis B virus. Now scientists are working to develop vaccines against breast cancer and other deadly cancers. And then there's HIV. HIV vaccine trials are going on in South Africa, and research is being done to develop an antibody-based HIV vaccine. Dr. Carl Diefenbach is a specialist in HIV at the National Institutes of Health. He says anti-AIDS drugs have already made a huge difference in controlling the epidemic.
If we put a vaccine on top of that too, it's not just stopping the epidemic, it's ending the epidemic.
A world free from these diseases will be a world where more people can raise healthy children, earn a living, and get out of poverty. It would be a world where not only people, but countries could prosper. Carol Pearson, VOA News, Washington.
When news breaks, VOA Africa, is there, bringing you news as it happens. Listen to Africa News Tonight, Monday through Friday at 1600 and 1800 UTC. And our 5-minute newscasts come to you at the top of each hour. VOA Africa, your trusted source of information.
Hey, sports fans, brighten your day by tuning into the sunny side of sports Monday through Friday at 1630 and 1830 UTC. Join us on Facebook at facebook.com/VOA Sunny and on Twitter at VOA Sunny Sports. Or check out the blog at blogs.voanews.com/Sunny. It's the sunny side of sports right here on the Voice of America.
Border Crossings.
Join host Larry London.
Larry London.
On Border Crossings, VOA's only worldwide music request hour.
Whoa.
Every weekday at 1500 Universal. Tune in for the biggest hits and amazing artists. Win prizes and get the latest news from exclusive celebrity interviews.
Ooh.
Send your requests to Facebook at VOA Larry London, Twitter at Border Crossings, or Instagram at Border Crossings VOA, or call 202-619-2077 and have your favorite music played to the entire world.
Ah.
Don't miss Border Crossings every weekday at 1500 Universal, only on the Voice of America.
And that's all the time we have for this edition of Health Chat. For more on today's show, log on to our Facebook page, .com/VOA Health Chat. And let's keep the conversation going. You can also email us at healthchat@voanews.com. I'm your host, Lenore Moudou in Washington, with producer Bonsa Toufa and engineer Michael Dubinsky. Until next time, take care, be well, and strive to make every day a healthy day.